And great to catch up with a man who really needs no introduction. He has been the doyen of footy journalism, sports journalism in this town for a long, long time, and he's still doing a magnificent job. In fact, my favourite show, if I wasn't in here, I'd be settling back to watch Open Mic tonight, sure. And that's Mike Sheen. He joins us on the line. G'day, Mike.
Hi, Brett. Hi, Robert.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Good, good. Now, Brett, can I ask you a question first?
Oh, he's got it. Yeah.
No. This is as a tennis lover.
Yes.
Oh. I want you to tell me and reassure me, please, that the country is in Paddy Rafter's corner on this issue with those brats.
Oh, no doubt, Michael. Look, I filled in for half a year last week, so I've had a fair say on Nick Kyrgios and Bernard Tomic, and they've got to smarten their act up. There's no doubt about that. And he's hit it on the head. It's not about entitlement. And I've dealt with the guys at the lower level like Sam Groth and Johnny Millman. I've gone and watched them on the Challenger Tour. These guys have done it hard and no funding. Have just put in the hard work and now they're getting some results, which is fantastic.
Well, the two boys are silly. I mean, taking on Paddy Rafter is like shooting Bambi, isn't it? Can't win that one.
No, he is.
Anyway,
he's
didn't
loved.
Ring me up about my tennis passion, did you?
No.
Congratulations, Mike, on your show. I think it's fantastic. And
thanks,
you've done really well. We've all got our favourites. Of course, Mark Eustace was one of the great ones you did. There's no doubt that must have been really. They're the ones I think you like, Mike.
I do, and for those who didn't see the Eustace one, it was the former Richmond and Essendon player and Swan.
Yep.
Essendon, Richmond, Swan, talking about his psychological condition. He was bipolar, which became into alcohol, into drugs, and then just totally lost his way and was as close to the edge as I think you can be without disastrous consequences. And to his eternal credit, he's now almost 10 years dry. And I think, surely, the satisfaction for me was that as a result of that program and Mark Eustace being so open and honest, that his old friends are back with him and have given him some sort of relevance and people have talked to him about work. So I think he's in a much better place now than he was 3 months ago.
Yeah, I catch up with him, unfortunately, and that's my fault. Once a year, we have a sort of an 80s reunion at either go to Terry Danner's place or Vanderhaar's place or a committeeman's place, and Wally's always there. So it was good to catch up with him. Just following on for that, Mike, you know, being my vintage and growing up watching play, do you find that your show is angled a bit more to the, the recognisable player with the younger generation? I know you've had Tuddy on, and I thought the Tony Charlton one was a great insight. Do you reckon you can go back further? Can you get from my old club, can you get a Ken Fraser and talk about Coleman and those sort of... does that still rate?
But I mean, like in the context we're talking about, you two and I, we love that. We devour it.
Yes, we do. Yeah.
So because we're pure in our footy loves, and you and I, Shuri, have got a greater sense of history because we've been around longer.
Right.
But the problem, I must say, my faith was shaken a bit. I had Graham Arthur on. I wanted to do him for a long time.
Yeah.
He's the Hawthorn. He went to Hawthorn, and they'd never played a final Hawthorn.
Mm.
And this guy became their first premiership captain and has been involved at this footy club for 11 premierships. And I thought, this is a story that has to be told. But, you know, the feedback seems to be that I've gone too far back and the younger people don't relate to that.
Well, that's my point,
And even the other one that I was really disappointed about. I mean, Simon Madden is, in my heart of hearts, Simon Madden's the best ruckman I've seen.
Right.
I didn't have the Jets crackers to put him ahead of Nichols and Farmer when I did a list a few years ago. So in my view, he is the best ruckman in my lifetime. And I thought, here we're talking about a giant of the game, at a club with a huge supporter base, and Simon rated really poorly, and people were saying to me, "Well, it's 30 years ago and stuff like that."
Yeah, so that's disappointing for you and me because, we breathe on that. Mike, I just want to touch on the. It was really interesting because, I can watch your show, but if there's someone comes up and I wanted to watch the Charlton one, and I did, you were quite incredulous when you said, "Oh well, Wayne Carey's the best player," and Tony sort of laughed at you, and said, "Well, take John Coleman, and then you can have a big gap to whoever you want." It is quite unbelievable. And sadly, mate, my first year at Essendon in 1973 as a 17-year-old, I was there 6 weeks, and John Coleman died, but I was so lucky to be brought up by Mackenzie and Eppis and John yep. Burt that just taught me about this bloke. And I was absolutely rapt that he sort of put you in your place. You just said, no, that can't be right. And Tony Charlton kept saying, Mike, yeah. he is the best player.
Your recall's perfect. I was actually, I thought there was this romantic notion about Coleman. You know, when people used to say, 5,000 people would go, would change ends at quarter time and half time so they'd be at the goal square where Coleman was playing. I said, now, how can they do that? I've seen the crowds at Windy Hill were always chock-a-block.
Yeah.
How do they do it? Anyway, people were saying this sort of stuff. Tony Charlton told me what he said, that there was John Coleman and then light years to the next best.
Yeah.
And John Kennedy told me.
Same thing.
John Kennedy said one day that Coleman went over his head, right?
Yeah.
Kennedy's 6'4", and he saw, I still can't believe this, and he said, I saw the soles of his feet. You know,
John, yeah.
I'm saying, John, you can't. And he looked me in the eye, and how could you query John Kennedy? So I said, okay, John, he must have. But, I mean, people who did see him play, lots of them, Al Frown was one, said that he's the best player that they've ever seen.
Yeah, and there's three alive still, Jack Jones, Harold Lambert, and Noel Allenson at Essendon.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still, he's still revered. They say, oh, you say, well, what about Hurd and Madden and Watson? And they just smile.
Yeah.
They just smile and go, well, what about them?
Mm.
You know?
Well, isn't it tragic that... Not tragic, it's not the right word. Isn't it sad that we don't have the vision of Coleman at his peak? Now, 4 weeks ago, I interviewed Tony Modra on Open Mic.
Yeah,
yep.
And it was really... And I said to him on air, and I meant it, I didn't really care what he said. I just wanted an excuse to put his highlights package up. Now, I can't believe, having watched only a month ago the Modra highlights, that Coleman could jump higher and more often than Modra. But they say he did.
Mike, who's the guest that... I know you've got Dale Lewis on tonight, which will be a fascinating chat, and, of course, the whole illicit drug debate, and this was raised back, what about 10, 12 years ago?
2002, Brett.
Yeah, so that'll be a fascinating insight. We look forward to that tonight. But who's the one, who's number one on the list that you're trying to chase at the moment to get on the show?
Well, I'm amazed at how many times people ask me that very question, and the answer is always the same. It's the boy who played full forward at Moorabbin and then went to the SCG by name of T. Lockett. Now, I have two problems with that, which means that I'm not going to get him. One is that he doesn't like the publicity anymore. And two, and the more overriding consideration, is he doesn't like the bloke who does the interviews, that being me.
That doesn't help.
So look, he did mention me in his speech at the Hall of Fame, which is the first time he said anything other than he wants to kill me. So I maybe made a small step forward there, but I would love Plugger. I think would just be unbelievably good. I think anyone in football would just have to watch it.
Mm.
You would have been jealous of me on Sunday, mate.
What did you do, Shorey?
I sat in a corner. I don't drink. This man had a quiet beer. And I spoke to him for 45 minutes about all things football. Bruce Dool.
You got 45 minutes out of Dooley?
Out of Dooley, yeah. My daughter married, sorry about the family stuff, my daughter's married Curly's son,
Nick.
They're very, very close. Yeah. So they had Curly's daughter had an engagement party and the great man was there with Trevor Keogh. So a young bloke that grew up in Tassie supporting Carlton, well, I just said I've got to go out and get the autograph book. But we are in a different era, Michael, aren't we?
One of the stories that I really, I don't know this firsthand, but I was told by enough Carlton people to believe it, that when they'd have their pleasant Sunday mornings or their social functions, that Bruce Dool and the late John O'Connell, O'Connell, remember the back pocket player?
Yes, my word.
Well, they would stand in a corner and all the blokes would be there and they'd all be mingling. And O'Connell and Dool wouldn't move and they would stand there and they wouldn't speak to each other except to say, yours. And so the bloke who was told it's yours, he'd go and get the two more beers. And that's the only dialogue that went, and they were totally content with each other's company.
And he had the news agency in Eltham. I live out that way, and I just see him crossing the road all the time, Bruce Dool. And of course, I know who he is. Because he's such a guy who never seeks any publicity, doesn't talk, as you've said, Shorey. I'd be wondering, the other drivers along the road, if they had any idea who Bruce Dool was, and probably the leafy Eltham, some of them might.
What about the irony in that? here's a man who's making his living post-football out of selling newspapers,
yeah.
and he never gave one interview.
No.
He'd be a good one to get for you, mate.
Yeah, he would. He would look at... And, but I think Plugger more so... Dooley is clearly a shy man. I mean, I don't know how you found him the other day, but he's shy, and I think
yeah.
it's genuine that he just is a retiring type. And it's one of the concerns that I have where everyone says to me about getting Gary Ablett Sr. And, I mean, we would promote the hell out of it, and it would have this massive expectation. But he also has got, I think he tends to freeze in front of the cameras. And I think it would be anticlimactic, which is the worry, you know, because we'd milk it for all we could and make it as commercial as you can. But I just wonder whether the Duels and the G. Ablett Seniors can be comfortable enough in front of a camera to really tell their story.
Absolutely. Hey, just a little birdie, Mike, told me that the man sitting opposite me, who I did see in full flow because I was on the inner sanctum of Fitzroy as part of the reserve staff a few years ago now, but a little birdie told me that the man opposite me was probably out of the top six of the most difficult coaches to deal with from your point of view.
Mine individually or on behalf of
yours?
Mine. Hey, I've known Shorey Brett since he was a very stylish half-forward flanker for Sandy Bay.
We go back 40 years. Mike was a young journo with his great mate Jeff Poulter writing for the Mercury newspaper, and I still have newspaper cuttings. Shore kicks for Sandy Bay by Mike Sheehan.
It didn't cut much ice when you came over here and you bashed the shit out of him when you're the Fitzroy coach. You remember those days?
Yeah, I did.
You and Gus Mitchell, lieutenant.
I've read The Phoenix Rising.
Single-handedly.
I read Phoenix Rising by Ross Oakley, the right-hand man. You were right in there.
Hey, but good question of yours. That'll throw the cat amongst the pigeons. Shorey, I've forgotten about that, and I don't forgive you, all right?
All right. I was just fighting for
my
club.
You know why I always did forgive you? Because A, our history, and B, I think hopefully me and certainly you are just so passionate about the game and your footy club
that was it.
That's fine. Yep.
And they were the days, Mike. It was just sort of find a quiet corner. The journos would just get the
mics.
Well,
that's the thing, Mike. Look, this is great. I'm in my element here, not because he's a mate of mine, but the historical part. Mike, you see the press conferences now. You used to just huddle into a corner. I remember I read the Red Fox by Norm Smith and how Alf Brown and that they used to just get a few bottles and just go to a quiet corner and talk about footy. Have they lost their, how do I say this without being disrespectful, have they lost the art of talking to coaches and communicating and having an argument with Norm Smith or Barras or as you did with Jeansy?
Not many argued with Norm Smith, Shorey.
No.
He was an exalted figure. Look, I think what's happened, it's been a gradual process.
Yep.
And one of the pivotal moments was when the senior journos, and I hate talking about myself in the third person, but say we're talking about Sheehan and Smith and Wilson.
Right.
At that time. Decided to stop going to press conferences because they were such hostile environments, right? And the footy clubs would square up for anything that was written or any personality clashes that were in existence. And I remember taking the view, this is a genuinely true story. I don't want to be harangued and humiliated by people like Mickey Malthouse, right?
Right.
And B, if I'm the chief football writer of the biggest selling paper in the country, I should be expressing my opinion anyway. And I shouldn't need a coach to tell me what happened or their theories or give me the stat sheets. So it was a double-edged thing with me to sort of say, well, okay, it's not working, it's too hostile, but I have to be man enough to make my opinions, be they right or wrong.
There you go. Well said.
Fantastic.
On that note, look forward to open mic tonight. Going to be a beauty with Dale Lewis. Always a regular feature on a Monday night.
And Shorey, there's one that I think will be up your... There's two. Can I just... Brett, just indulge me for 30 seconds.
Sure.
Two in the can. One is Jared Neesham, and it's the story of what Jared Neesham has done since he quit, since he finished in AFL football.
Clontarf
via the Indigenous kids.
Mm. Yep.
And I love the story. And the other one, which is a really... struck my heart was Alex Johnson, the kid that played his last game for Sydney was a premiership in 2012,
The boy from Xavier College.
That's him.
Yep.
Played on Gunston in the grand final.
Yep.
Played 45 games in a row to that point. Hasn't played since, and is facing another knee reconstruction in August. Mm. And I'm amazed at how mature this kid is and how determined he is to get back. So well, the parent in us, it will sort of make you want to watch it. But the other part about the footballers sort of say, how could this kid be on the brink? He wasn't on the brink. He achieved the ultimate dream of the premiership, and he's 20 years of age, and he may never play again.
Looking forward to it, mate. Now, talking about looking forward to it, do you wake up on Saturday morning, or well, a Thursday night, and say, I'm looking forward to going to the footy? Do you that with the same love and passion and expectation of the game that you always have?
No, I don't, and I thought I would, but right. I haven't been. And if I watch any more Richmond Carlton games, well, I might never experience that feeling again.
Yeah, well, some of it's tough to swallow, but
that was putrid.
Yeah,
I mean, I am Zach Tui, yep. who I'm a fan of, so yep. I can give him a bake because I'm a genuine fan of his. Mm. His ability to kick and learn a foreign game. I mean, he dropped 2 chest marks the other night. I reckon 25 blokes on the field missed relatively simple targets. And I'm thinking, here's a team that Richmond that aspires to finish top 4 or 5.
Yep.
And the Blues had turned it around. Their application was so much better. I know they're not a great team. But I think if that's Friday night fair, I'd hate to be sitting there trying to convince people to watch this game if that's the best we've got to offer.
Mm, yeah. And look, the goal kicking, and we could talk all night, the goal kicking is just laughable, some of it.
It is.
To be totally honest. Blake's kicking off their knee 25 metres out.
And, you know, and we are, and people sort of say it's in the head. But, I mean, Djokovic doesn't miss a shot when he's mid-court in the tennis match and there's an opening there,
no.
does he? I mean, the golfers don't. The golfers miss some, but you see them when they have to put 5 and 6 and 7 foot putts in.
Mm.
They're 8 and 9 times out of 10. I mean, I think this is, and I've always been a big believer that the best of the modern game is better than it's ever been played before. But the worst of the modern game might be worse than we've ever seen before.
Well said. Mike, we're going to leave it there. Great to chat to you.
Look no forward. Chance, Johnny Devine.
Johnny Devine.
Come on.
Hey, Brett, Johnny nice Devine, one. For your interest, is coached. No, I hate talking about me as a footballer.
No, you I can.
I did play a year in Tasmania at North Hobart. And John Devine was the coach. So that's why Shuri's alluding to
him.
Well, he's one of my heroes, John Devine.
I was at Cadinia Park when the Roys knocked off Geelong. First round, gee, I reckon
82?
No. John Devine's first year as coach at Geelong. In the pink shirt, giving the big spray at three-quarter time. It was about 34 degrees. You couldn't get a cool drink in the ground. The Roys knocked off Geelong.
Can I give you a line that day? Was that wasn't Diesel's first game, was that?
Could have been. I reckon it was about 85, 86.
No, I reckon Diesel played under Tommy, didn't he, Shuri?
He did. Yeah, he got him.
Yep.
Anyway.
I remember Geelong playing Fitzroy down there in round one, and the Roy boys thought that they would kill him, and their centre line at Geelong was Turner, Williams and Ablett. And Williams and Ablett had played very little football.
Yeah.
And that centre line had 140 possessions between them.
Wasn't pretty. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks for coming on, mate.
Nice to talk to you, boys.
See you at Christmas.
Mike Sheehan.